Hello, I'm Gian, and welcome to this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News for the 20th of November 2024.
Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by the sight loss charity Beacon. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. Once you've enabled the Talking Newspapers skill, all you need to do is play Talking Newspapers and ask for the Black Country Talking News. Our Talking News service is also available via the free Wireless for the Blind app. It can be found on the Beacon Centre website, www.beaconvision.org/talking-news. As a podcast via services such as Apple or Spotify, or as a free CD, simply contact Beacon Centre on 01902 880 111. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Reading for you this week, we have myself, Gian, Christine, Angela, Ian, Liz, Mohammed, Simon, and of course, not forgetting Flashback Roger. In this week's edition, we have the latest Beacon update with Mohammed. From pharmacies to trees and trees to comedies, we have some very interesting news from the Black Country. This week's Did You Know section with Roger and Quiz with Mina is all about one of the region's most famous attractions that was founded shortly after the Norman conquest of 1066 and was mentioned in the Doomsday Book. Can you guess what it may be? It's definitely starting to feel like winter out there. We hear from Mina, who has the forecast for the week ahead. And with the autumn leaves now falling, there's a lot of tidying up to do in the garden this month. But now is also the time to plant tulip bulbs to ensure some spring colours next year. So with thanks to our gardening experts at MK Pulse magazine, we have some seasonal hints and tips to prepare for winter and make a good start for successful blooming in 2025. Local news to start though. And we begin with a special healthcare report, focusing on our pharmacies and the difficulties they are currently facing.
Now, if you are currently prescribed medication or have had to take any over recent time, how easy has it been to get hold of them? Well, in a recent report, pharmacies have been detailing their struggles and explained how they feel trapped in an NHS system which is not giving them the money they need to supply medicines to their customers. The National Pharmacy Association, NPA, has called for an annual £1.7 billion funding increase, and some pharmacy owners have said they would cut opening hours and stop home deliveries in protest. Sherry Samurai, manager at the Woodside Pharmacy in Telford, said she was having to turn away frustrated patients because she could not justify the cost of buying in some drugs. The government said it was looking to make fundamental reforms and had inherited a system that has been neglected for too long. Nigel Dugmore from Donington Pharmacy, also in Telford, said the cost of buying in stock had risen by up to 60% in the past few years, but the money he got from the NHS to fund to pay for it had remained the same. The MPA is not a trade union, but represents 6,500 of the UK's community pharmacies. It said 700 pharmacies had shut in England in the past 2 years alone, and that it had no choice but to recommend pharmacies withdraw services from as early as the new year if funding was not increased. Ms. Samurai said, "We're working with really tight margins with our wholesalers at the moment. We are turning away a lot of patients, for example, on blood pressure medication. It's just not worth us dispensing them." She has been a pharmacy manager for 15 years and said larger chains could get some benefit from bulk ordering, but that was not easy for community pharmacies such as the one she manages. Letting down patients because she cannot afford to buy in some prescription medication was hard for her staff, she said, adding, "It really does impact us."
An NHS spokesperson said it was working with government and pharmacies to find a way forward so patients continue to receive high-quality care. Mr. Dugmore, who is also a Conservative councillor in Telford, agreed that the current system was not working. He said, "For quite a long time now, the amount the NHS has been paying for medicines has been less than the cost it takes to buy it in." He said pharmacies were stuck with a five-year funding settlement from the government, which the Treasury will not budge on, but wholesalers had been increasing prices. "You would have thought there would have been some review clauses in there," he said. To make matters worse, he said pharmacies had to buy in medicines before they could apply to the NHS for the funding to pay for it, which can take up to 2 months to arrive. That can place extra pressure on his community pharmacy in the winter when it has to buy in extra cold and flu treatments.
On Kar Singh, a pharmacist and director of Prentex, which runs 8 pharmacies across Wolverhampton and Walsall, said a number of pharmacies there had closed recently and that funding has dropped like a stone over the past 5 years. But he decided not to vote in the NPA ballot for protest action over fears it would cause his patients concern. "We've already had calls from a number of patients about the change in services," he said. "So it's about trying to reassure them." Nigel Dugmore also said he did not support the action and would not be reducing the service he provided. He said, "I couldn't, hand on heart, run around and say to someone, I can't treat you because the NHS won't pay. You have to remember why you're here. Why should patients suffer?"
Amo Sahal, pharmacist at Kitson's Pharmacy in Worcester, which dates back to 1749, said his current funding position was quite disconcerting. "I think this is a really clear sign from the people that took part in the vote," he said. "The current contract that we are stuck with historically hasn't had any change for quite a while, and we're having to live with that. If you imagine a hamster on a treadmill, we're going faster and faster, and even then it's not enough. It's not surprising the pharmacies are closing. The government has to sit up and take notice of this, because once they're gone, they're gone. As part of the treatment for your eye condition, you may have to pick up prescriptions on a regular basis. The following is a helpful review of what help you could receive towards the cost of prescriptions if you are blind or partially sighted, and how these vary across the UK. If you live in Scotland, Wales, or Northern Ireland, you don't have to pay for prescriptions, whatever your age or circumstances. If you live in England, your prescriptions should be free if you are 60 or over, are under 16, are 16 to 18 and in full-time education, are pregnant or have had a baby in the previous 12 months and have a valid maternity exemption certificate, have a specified medical condition and have a valid medical exemption certificate, have a continuing physical disability that prevents you from going out without help from another person, and have a valid medical exemption certificate. Hold a war pension exemption certificate and the prescription is for your accepted disability, are an NHS inpatient. You are also entitled to free prescriptions if you receive a means-tested benefit, specifically income support, income-based job seekers allowance, pension credit guarantee credit, income-based employment and support allowance, or universal credit. You or your partner, including civil partners, are entitled to or named on either a valid NHS tax credit exemption certificate or a valid NHS certificate for full help with health costs, HC2. Getting help under the low income scheme. Even if you do not automatically qualify for help with NHS costs, you may be able to get either full or partial help with your NHS costs under something called the Low Income Scheme. The amount of help you could receive is worked out by comparing your requirements with your income. You may qualify for either full or partial help with your NHS costs. To claim under the Low Income Scheme, complete Form HC1, which you can get from your local Social Security office, some GPs, dentists and opticians, and send it to the Health Benefits Division. If you are entitled to full help, you will receive an HC2 certificate. If you can get partial help, you will get an HC3 certificate. You can then present your certificate when paying for an item or service. The HC2 and HC3 certificates are normally valid for 6 months to 5 years. If you need more information or need help with the low income scheme, call the low income scheme helpline on 0300 330 1343.
Ambulance crews across the West Midlands will take part in research to speed up identifying whether someone is having a stroke. The West Midlands Ambulance Service Golden Hour for Stroke study will trial a lateral flow test that uses saliva to find stroke markers. About 200 patients will be recruited to take part in the two-year experiment, with results expected to be published by the end of 2026. Paramedics said the study would have no impact on patient care while it is being carried out. The trial is being funded by the Stroke Association charity, and ambulance crews will be working alongside University of Birmingham and University Hospitals Birmingham. It is hoped it will fast-track access to brain-saving treatments like thrombectomy and reduce journeys to specialised stroke centres when they are not required. WMAS lead research paramedic Josh Miller said, "This is a major piece of research which could have a hugely positive impact on stroke care within the West Midlands." Ambulance crews who are taking part in the study will still conduct the FAST test themselves when they arrive on scene with a patient, before collecting a saliva sample if they believe there are possible signs of stroke. "There is absolutely no impact to the patient care provided by us taking part in the research. The FAST test looks for stroke symptoms and stands for face weakness, arm weakness, speech problems, and time to call 999.
And as medical TV drama Doctors said farewell with its final episode last week, a 9,000 signature petition to try and save it shows just how much it resonated with audiences. The soap, which is set in the fictional town of Leatherbridge, has followed the lives of staff and patients of a Midlands GP practice for 24 years. However, in October last year, the BBC said it would be cancelled after superinflation in drama production led to costs significantly rising. The announcement galvanised superfan Caris Ashby to set up the petition to try to save it. But as the last of more than 4,500 episodes is broadcast, she has accepted defeat, saying its final bow represents the end of an era. Miss Ashby says simply accepting its cancellation was not enough, so I felt like I had to try and do something. She told the BBC that many, often older viewers, set their whole day around watching the episodes. "I'm only young, there will be new programmes for me to watch, but I worry about the older generation who depend on the familiarity of the show," said Miss Ashby. Those who worked on the show have also expressed their sadness ahead of the soap coming to an end. Previously, writer and director Joy Wilkinson wrote, "I'd have left TV drama if it wasn't for this wonderful, warm and creative show." Last year, the BBC said it had faced a choice on whether to reinvest in the Birmingham site, where the show was made, or finance new shows across the West Midlands region. The daytime drama has featured household names including Eddie Redmayne and Sheridan Smith, and it has won a total of 17 BAFTAs. TV critic Scott Bryan from the BBC's Must Watch podcast has previously said on the show that it had been a training ground for many actors. The corporation has thanked all the cast and crew while stressing it remained fully committed to TV production in the West Midlands. So, with the curtains now seemingly drawn in the town of Leatherbridge, how about a venture over to the village of Leaford? Never heard of it? Well, keep your ears peeled for Leaford Village, an exclusive new audio drama we shall be bringing to you on the Black Country Talking News very, very soon.
Up next, we have the Beacon Update, brought to us by Mohammed.
Hey everyone, it's Mohammed from Beacon, and I'm bringing you the latest updates from across the charity. Ready to party like it's 1990-something? Join us at Beacon's Bilston shop on Friday, the 29th of November, as we rewind time to the raddest decade for one day only. It's our 30th birthday, and we're going all out on a full-on 1990s celebration, complete with 1990s prices for the day only, market store or try your luck at our tombola, fancy dress, dig out those chokers and bucket hats, free cake and refreshments, because every 1990s party needs a snack break. Get ready for a blast from the past, and let's make this a birthday to remember. Come visit us at 28 High Street, Bilston. Come for the bargains, stay for the vibe. Remembrance Day 2024. At the 11th hour on the 11th day of the 11th month, we pause for a 2 minute silence to honor those who sacrificed so much in the pursuit of peace. Our Hales Owen marked the occasion with a shop window display, with a unique dress made of poppies, wartime uniforms, and books created to commemorate this poignant day. Santa Run announcement. Ho, ho, ho. It's official. We're thrilled to announce that the Wolverhampton Mayor will be kicking off our Santa Run at West Park on Sunday, the 8th of December. Get ready for a festive 5K that's fun for all ages. Bring your family, friends, and Christmas spirit. Every adult ticket gets a free Santa suit included in their ticket. Young runners get a Santa hat, and our four-legged friends get a festive bandana. Whether you're sprinting, jogging, or strolling, this event is all about festive fun and laughter. Don't miss out on the merriest run of the year. Sign up now at www.beaconvision.org/Santa-run-2. Thank you. We're always amazed by the fantastic donations that come through our doors, like this stunning Peter Smith Picture Love Seat, one of only 250 ever made. It's currently available in our Sledgley's shop, which is ready for one lucky art lover to take home. If you've got any unique treasures of your own that need new home, consider donating them to Beacon. Every item sold helps us support people living with sight loss. So whether you're looking to donate something special or find your next favorite piece, pop by and see what gems are waiting for you. That's it for this week. Join us again for more Beacon updates.
Thanks for that update, Mohammed. Next up, we have another block of local news, and up first, we hear from Christine.
The popular City of Wolverhampton Rotary Club Tree of Remembrance, to honour loved ones and raise funds for good causes, has been unveiled by Mayor Councillor Linda Leach. The tree will be on display in the Warfront Centre near the Dudley Street entrance over the festive season and will provide an opportunity for families to include their loved ones who have passed away in their Christmas celebrations. Shoppers will be invited to leave a memorial message, which will be displayed in exchange for a £5 donation per listing, which includes the person's name and words, which is then put on the tree and in a cabinet nearby. There are already 131 names on the tree, and £845 has been raised from them, with sponsors boosting the total to around £1,600. Since the appeal was launched 21 years ago, it has raised over £120,000 for good causes and charities. Last year, more than 600 people were remembered, and the money raised resulted in each of the four nominated charities receiving £1,830 towards projects. This year's beneficiaries will be Sponsored Breaks, a local community interest company, CIC, which recognises people who are most deserving of a free campervan holiday. Wolverhampton MS Therapy and Oxygen Centre, which offers therapies for people with long-term medical conditions. Compton Care Hospice Trust, and Rotary Club of Wolverhampton Charitable Trust, which funds a range of causes at home and abroad. City of Wolverhampton Rotary Club President and member of the Tree of Remembrance Committee, Lorraine McCarthy, said, "The tree has become a real tradition in Wolverhampton, and we are always amazed at the generosity of the public and sponsors. This year, we are hoping each of the beneficiaries will receive around £2,000 when all the money is counted, so we are aiming high, and again, we thank everyone who has taken part or contributed to the appeal. And in a few weeks' time, there shall also be an opportunity for us all to come together at Beacon for a heartfelt moment of reflection with the annual Forget-Me-Not Tree Service for 2024, with special guests providing a touching tribute to this poignant occasion of remembrance. Further details of the service shall be provided in the December and January Lifestyle newsletter."
Around the Black Country region, you may find the European ash, sycamore, oak, or even a silver birch tree, all of which play a vital role in the ecosystem, embodying not only heritage and identity, but providing numerous ecological benefits too. But alarm bells are ringing as scientists from around the world assessing dangers posed to the world's trees have revealed that more than a third of species are facing extinction in the wild. The number of threatened trees now outweighs all threatened birds, mammals, reptiles, and amphibians put together, according to the latest update to the official Extinction Red List. The news was released in Cali, Colombia, at the UN Biodiversity Summit for World Leaders, COP16, to assess progress on a landmark rescue plan for nature. Trees are vital for life, helping to clean the air and soak up carbon emissions, as well as providing homes for thousands of birds, insects, and mammals. More than 1,000 scientists took part in the assessment of the conservation status of trees, compiled by the plant conservation charity Botanic Gardens Conservation International, BGCI, and the International Union for Conservation of Nature, IUCN. Emily Beach of BGCI said 30% of the world's trees are now threatened with extinction. "Trees are highly threatened all across the world, but now we have the tools that we need to make sure that we prioritise conservation action on the ground," she said. Trees are at risk in 192 countries, with clearing land for farming and logging the biggest threat, and in temperate regions, pests and diseases. Well-known trees such as magnolias are amongst the most threatened, with oaks, maple and ebonies also at risk. Scientists at the Royal Botanic Gardens in Kew, London, are working to conserve trees across the world by collecting seeds and growing specimens in arboretums. Conservation researcher Stephen Backman said the figures were shocking, with a knock-on effect from the many other plants and animals that depend on trees. "We are currently in a biodiversity crisis," he said. "Many of the species of trees all around the world are providing habitat for many other species of birds, mammals, insects, and fungi. If we lose the trees, we are losing many other species with them. As well as trees, the update to the Extinction Red List brought bad news for other plants and animals. The hedgehog moved a step closer to extinction as populations shrink across much of Europe, including the UK. The much-loved mammal is losing its natural habitat due to the expansion of farming and land development. There are also concerns for the survival of migratory birds, many of which make stop-offs in Britain's vast shorelines and estuaries. 4 UK shorebirds, the grey plover, dunlin, turnstone and curlew sandpiper, are becoming more endangered on the red list. At COP16, world leaders reviewed the progress being made to meet a previously made pledge of protecting 30% of land, seas and oceans by 2030. Now, a little closer to home, albeit 40 metres in the air, the Forestry Commission, a government department that supports woodland creation and management in England, are helping to support vital woodland research projects within the region. And as the following describes, they're creating quite unique apprenticeship opportunities too.
On leaving school in Stafford and not being set on any particular field, Tom Downs went to music college for a year. Then he worked in a variety of jobs, in a bar, in offices, in a warehouse, and on production lines. He has always been an outdoors person, spending lots of time in Cannock Chase and going camping in Scotland. When asked about career plans, he used to say he had no idea, but he could always see himself working for the Forestry Commission. A family friend told him about the opportunity to apply for an apprenticeship at the University of Birmingham's Birmingham Institute of Forest Research, BIFOR's woodland site at Norbury Junction on the Shropshire-Staffordshire border. It was just 20 minutes down the road, but not somewhere he had ever heard of before. "Obviously my apprenticeship is pretty unique," Downs says. "I don't think I know anyone who works at a site similar to this. The so-called free air carbon dioxide enrichment facility exposing trees to heightened levels of CO2 is one of only two in the world located in a mature forest rather than in a lab or open landscape. The other is just outside Sydney. 6 arrays of towers pump either CO2 or ambient air around the oak woodland, which also contains hazel, sycamore and hawthorn. Alongside working in the wood, Downs has studied general engineering one day a week at Solihull College, a brand new discipline for him when he started at the Institute. "It's been very challenging," he said, "very maths-based. And whenever you're not doing maths, you're doing physical studies rooted in maths, for example, thermodynamics." He found the practical machine workshop in his first year useful and refreshing. "Something completely different. You can only learn it by doing it." The main role of an apprentice engineer is to look after the facility's instrumentation and CO2 system. There are 130 tons of liquid CO2 on site, always in use. 6 people work full-time at the facility. Downs often climbs one of the 25-metre or 40-metre towers which diffuse the CO2. The apprenticeship includes training to work at height with wind gauges and all the correct climbing equipment. Downs told interviewers when he was going for the role that he had a healthy amount of fear of heights. After lots of swaying in his early climbs, it got easier, he said, including getting up to close passes by low-flying helicopters.
He started the apprenticeship in challenging circumstances at the start of the first COVID lockdown on the 1st of April 2020. The Byfor facility was still open, operating 2 days a week. By summer 2020, it was back to normal. In a way, Byfor is the largest climate change experiment in the world in terms of the scale and the scope of its site. Down said, "There are so many people from different countries and universities in one place." Downs describes himself as quite passionate about the environment and aware about climate change. "It's good to be working somewhere where in a small way you're getting involved." He recognises the struggle that a lot of people have with climate change and environmental issues. He reasons this may be down to the fact that because of where they live, they are probably not connected to the natural world and it feels quite separate from their own lives. If they realised the connection, they would realise the severity of the issue. He urges town and city dwellers to get outdoors when they can, even to the local park, to enjoy the benefits of clearing their heads and improved well-being, as well as getting closer to nature. People can come to the Byfor woodland on a pre-booked tour, and it is often engineers like Downs who lead these, with school groups and local authority staff among typical visitors. Looking ahead, Downs hopes to work somewhere where he can be outside at least some of the time and aims to find roles where he can bring his engineering know-how and forestry skills together. Green Careers Week is a national campaign to encourage young people to consider the huge range of roles in different sectors that help communities and the planet and the study and training pathways to access them. In its 2023 Net Zero Workforce Report, the Climate Change Committee estimated that up to 725,000 new jobs in low-carbon industries could be created by the end of the decade, while WPI Economics said there would potentially be 505,000 jobs in green priority sectors by 2030, a growth rate of nearly 6% a year. But a green career is wider than that. Any job or role that contributes to preserving or restoring the environment, and in any industry, not just those seen as green. Visit greencareershub.com to access the latest resources and information.
Now it's time to test your knowledge. Here come the quiz questions for this edition, and they're brought to us by Mina. Hello and welcome to this week's flashback quiz. All the answers you need can be found later in Flashback Rogers' Did You Know feature. But for now, these are your questions. Here we go. Question 1. In what year did Dudley Zoo open? Question 2. What is on the menu for the animals in Dudley Zoo at Christmas? Question 3. What was unique about Dudley Zoo chairlift? Question 4. What was the castle address before 1926? Question 5. Which side held the castle during the England Civil War? And finally, question 6. What is the name given to the castle famous ghost? I will be back with you with the answers later, but for now, best of luck!
Thanks for those, Mina. I'll get my mind working on them right now. Up next, however, let's have another block of local news.
The new friendly bench in Stourbridge Town Centre has been unveiled by the Mayor of Dudley. Councillor Hilary Bills was invited to take the wraps off the new bench near to the subway in Foster Street. Stourbridge U3A, working on behalf of Stourbridge in Bloom, led a campaign to raise the cash to fund the bench. It is hoped it will become a meeting point for friends old and new. Councillor Hilary Bills, the Mayor of Dudley, said, "This is an absolutely fantastic idea and I was delighted to go along and officially unveil the new bench. It is in a perfect location for people just arriving or leaving the town and I hope it will be the site of many conversations and the start of many new friendships." Brenda Stevenson of Stourbridge U3A said, "As part of our work in helping Stourbridge in Bloom in 2019, we were given the responsibility of Foster Street to keep tidy and plant. We felt it needed somewhere for people to rest before and after shopping, and for young people to meet their friends. The community has really come together to help make it happen, and it is great to see the bench in place. It really shows how many people care about Stourbridge and are willing to give up their time and money to improve our town. Contributions to funding for the bench came from Stourbridge in Bloom, Pre-Metro Operations, Lynn Gibson and Joanna Clark. Lynn contributed on behalf of the family of the late Des Smart, a former pharmacist in the town. The bench commemorates Mr. Smart and his family."
And full works are underway to deliver major improvements to Wolverhampton's Central Library and adult education facilities as part of the £61 million Phase 2 City Learning Quarter development. The Central Library plans will see public facilities enhanced and include the restoration of the Grade 2 listed building's facade on Snow Hill, a new roof, internal remodeling, new rear entrance lobby and landscaping. Adult Education Wolverhampton's Alan Garner Centre on Old Hall Street will also undergo internal remodeling, and the construction of a two-storey glazed link building to connect it directly to Central Library's 1930s extension. This will create a modernised, reconfigured and accessible digitally enabled Central Library for the public, and expanded centralised adult education provision that meets post-16 learner and employer demands. The improved Central Library and Adult Education Wolverhampton facilities will sit alongside a new state-of-the-art education facility for City of Wolverhampton College, currently being constructed by McLaughlin and Harvey on the site of the college's former Metro 1 campus, and land on the corner of Garrick Street and Bilston Street, where the Faces nightclub building once stood. Central Library and Adult Education Wolverhampton will continue to operate throughout the duration of the works, which are expected to be completed around the end of 2025. Council's Cabinet Member for City Development, Jobs and Skills, Councillor Chris Burden, said, "Following a successful pre-construction period, Speller Metcalfe will deliver the full programme of improvements to the public facilities at our historic Central Library and the Adult Education Building. These two components are an important part of our City Learning Quarter Phase 2 vision to co-locate new state-of-the-art facilities in the city centre and improve life chances for people of all ages through learning, apprenticeship and employment offers. The restoration and development of the Grade 2 listed library will enhance the offer for current users of its services and attract new users. The inspirational environment created by the City Learning Quarter will also offer excellent connectivity to rail, bus, tram and cycle routes." Ninda Johal, Chair of Wolverhampton's City Investment Board, said, "This investment is hugely important to ensuring the city's central library and adult education facilities are the best they can be. It is part of a City Learning Quarter master plan that is going to deliver an outstanding education and skills offer and enhanced public facilities for the people of Wolverhampton. The exciting City Learning Quarter Phase 2 development is being supported by around £50 million government funding, plus contributions from the college and council. It will pave the way for City of Wolverhampton College to move from its outdated Paget Road site, which has been identified as land to build much needed housing on. The college forecasts that over a 10-year period, approximately 45,000 people will benefit from learning at the City Learning Quarter, and around 7,500 apprenticeships will be started. Its central location and close proximity to the new £150 million transport interchange will make it easily accessible. It will also boast environmental benefits in line with the Council's climate emergency agenda."
Talking of improvements, a youth centre in West Bromwich has been given a star-studded makeover during a Children in Need special of the BBC's Interior Design Masters. Alan Carr was joined by six famous faces who donned overalls and cracked open paint cans as they competed to create the best designs. The show was focused on Sandwell Young Carers Project, SYCP, a Children in Need funded project which supports young people who have caring responsibilities for a dependent family member. Chief Executive of the centre, Tracy Hawkins, said the children deserve the very best. As part of the show, the celebrities gave a fresh look to a playroom for 5 to 11-year-olds, a games room for the 12 to 18-year-olds, an art room, a music room, a chill-out space and a meeting space. The building in Brat Street provides a place for children who care for their loved ones to spend time away from home and unwind. Comedian John Richardson teamed up with model and TV host Leomi Anderson during the show, while musician and actor Martin Kemp partners with his wife and well-known singer Shirley Kemp. The final team featured comedian Darren Harriott and podcast host Joanne McNally. During the show, Richardson helped create a chill-out room. The effect the building will have on a generation of young people makes the world better, he said. Comedian John Richardson transformed the children's chill-out room from the tired, circular blue tables and chairs with dated light blue walls to an outdoor theme with green forest walls, wooden tables with fake trees rising up through the middle of the room, and a reading area of cushions lining the floor. If you want to live in a better world, then you start providing stuff like that for kids everywhere, Richardson added. Meanwhile, Spandau Ballet's Martin Kemp, who redesigned a music room, seen here before the makeover, cluttered, with instruments filling up most of the floor space, with an old desk off to the right-hand side, and a decor of dark green carpet and lime green walls, created a music room, including, of course, gold painted walls, which was lauded as the best design on the show. He said, I'm on cloud nine. I wanted to make a room that was inspirational, aspirational. Music has done so much for me in my life. It's just nice to give it to someone else. Following the makeover, Miss Hawkins said, providing care for someone does make you a special person. Making those rooms special has made them feel recognized and loved. They deserve the very best. This makeover is going to make such a huge difference to the children we support, and I am so excited for everyone else to see it.
And if the likes of Alan Carr, John Richardson, and Black Country stand-up comedian Darren Harriott, who all worked wonders on that task for children in need, make your belly laugh, then you'll be excited to hear that a Stafford village is set to host a major comedy festival next spring. Jokes on Us Comedy Club have announced the first ever Now's All Comedy Festival, bringing top TV comedians to a tiny village hall. The three-day showcase of stand-up comedy features Strictly Come Dancing star Sean Walsh, alongside Live at the Apollo stars Terry Alderton and Lindsay Santoro, amongst other top comedy names, and will take place between 21st to the 23rd of March 2025 at Knowsall Grosvenor Centre. Resident compere of Jokes on Us Comedy Club, Alex Hilton, said, since we launched our first show in Knowsall back in 2023, Knowsall has become one of my favourite venues. It's always a great atmosphere, and the local community have been really supportive of the local comedy nights. It's really great to bring top TV comedians to such an intimate venue. Word has been getting round the circuit about Knowsall Comedy Club. Comedians are always pestering me to book them in, so when we had the chance to organise Knowsall Comedy Festival, I knew we could get a belting lineup together, and I was right. I reckon it'll be the best lineup happening anywhere in the country that weekend. And it's not in a theatre, it's not at the comedy store, it's in a village hall in rural Staffordshire. The three-day event starts on Friday, 21st of March, with a show featuring Terry Alderton, fresh from his sold-out national tour, Leicester Mercury Comedian of the Year winner Nina Gilligan, and Edinburgh Fringe Best Newcomer nominee David Eagle. The Saturday show is headlined by Sean Walsh, best known for his appearances on Strictly Come Dancing, I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, and locally as the star of Stafford Gatehouse Theatre's Twelfth Night. Sean is joined by Lindsay Santoro, who performed at Wembley as the support act of choice for Joe Lycett, plus Comedy Circuit veteran Peter Brush. The Weekend of Laughs will round off on Sunday, 23rd of March, with a new act showcase featuring some of the rising stars of the comedy circuit, and your chance to catch the stars of tomorrow, including Rachel Baker, Tabish Akbar, Chloe Reynolds, and Musical Comedian of the Year, Tom Towling. Alex Hilton, who grew up in Stafford before becoming a professional comedian and winning the Leicester Comedy Festival Best Show in 2020, will compare the three-day extravaganza. Tickets range from £7.50 to £20 and can be purchased from ticketsource.co.uk or by searching online for Knowsall Comedy Festival. If you can't wait until next March, Tickets are available for Knowsall Comedy Club's Christmas show on December 21st, headlined by 8 out of 10 Cats star Tony Law.
Up now is another Beacon update.
Wolverhampton Visual Impairment Support Group. We are a friendly group of people who all have a visual impairment. We meet every Tuesday morning at the Arena Theatre, Wolfruna Street, Wolverhampton, WV1 1SC4, a cuppa, a chat, to share things that help learn easy Braille, or to help get to grips with technology like mobile phones. If you are interested or would like to come along, you can just turn up at 10:30 a.m. or call 07805 100484.
Up next, it's trivia time, brought to us by Flashback Roger and his Did You Know feature. It's all yours, Roger. Take it away.
Hello again, everyone. Well, I hope you're all feeling well and getting yourselves ready for Christmas, as it's speeding towards us already. Must admit, I'm a bit behind myself this year over Christmas. I'm normally on my second box of mince pies by now, but I'm late. Never mind. Any road up. There was a bit about Dudley Zoo on the local radio that got me thinking, and I found some facts about this Black Country asset that I thought are worth repeating. So I'll share them with you now this week. So, now, did you know that? Dudley Zoo opened in May 1937. It has the world's largest single collection of tecton structures, designed by architect Berthold Lubetkin. They were constructed between 1935 and 1937 using a specialist system of reinforced concrete. 12 Grade 2 listed buildings were granted World Monuments Fund status in 2009, and they're ranked along such world-famous landmarks as Machu Picchu and the Taj Mahal. And they don't often get through a lot of fruit and veg in the zoo. On average, the zoo storeman orders 122 kilo of apples, 14 kilo of oranges, 20 kilo of pears, 79 kilo of bananas, 29 kilo of tomatoes, 35 sticks of celery, and 11 kilos of cucumber, 54 kilos of lettuce, and a ton of red meat for the carnivores. Oh, and there's even sprouts on the menu at Christmas. And the zoo's chairlift was originally opened on May the 11th, 1958, and was the first passenger-carrying aerial ropeway to be installed in England. And each ride then cost 6 old pence, or 2.5p in today's money. But today it's free, and 80% of visitors take it to the top. Closed in 2002 over safety fears, but reopened again in 2012 after a grant of £172,000 provided the cash. During the work, over 16 layers of paint had to be removed from the chairs, which are now fully restored and painted cream again. And here's an odd one, because Dudley Castle has only been situated within the borders of the town of Dudley since 1926, when the borders were changed. It used to be located within the borders of a neighbouring town of Sedgley, so strictly speaking, up till then, it could be said it was Sedgley Castle. And during the English Civil War, it was held by the Royalists and lost to Parliamentarians after a two-year siege in 1646, when Cromwell rendered it useless as a fortification. The residential part was untouched and remained occupied by the Dukes of Dudley until a great fire in 1750 wrecked it completely. And of course, the most famous ghost of Dudley Castle is that of the Grey Lady, who is often seen by staff and visitors alike walking the grounds of the castle. And people have also reported hearing drumming from the castle keep, which is thought to be associated with a young drummer boy who was killed by a single bullet during the Civil War. Well, how about that then? That's Dudley Castle and Zoo in a nutshell. But I can't let you go without mentioning Teddy Gray's Rock, because for me it's as famous as Dudley is itself. With the castle printed on every bag, I confess that when I was a kid, I thought that was where Teddy Gray lived. In road up, this has made me fancy one of his herbal tablets. So I'm off. I'll be back next week, so bye for now. Ta-ra a bit. Ta-ra.
Up now we have to hear what the weather has in store for us. Brought to us, come rain or shine, by our own sunny Mina.
Hi everyone, I hope you are all well. It's Mina here with your forecast for the week ahead. And looking at the forecast at the moment, it's looking like there should be a mix of sunshine and showers throughout the week with low UV levels. The sunrise and sunset times are 7:45 a.m. for the sunrise and 4:05 p.m. for the sunset. For Friday 22nd of November, it's looking rather quiet with a chance of some frost early on, but this should all clear relatively quickly, leading to a clear, sunny and dry day for us all. With a bitterly cold breeze coming in from the west, temperatures will feel that very wintry, struggling to get up to above a couple of degrees. Moving on and into the weekend, and the rains looking rather relentless, with early morning frost forecast for both Saturday 23rd and Sunday 24th November. Although unlike Friday, we shall see heavy and persistent rain for much of the weekend, with a most moderate breeze starting to sweep up from the southeast. Temperatures will actually improve a touch on Friday and may even climb back up to 8 degrees, although with the breeze blowing, this may actually feel more like 4 degrees. So it will be cold into next week, and we shall start to see a subtle change setting in from Monday 25th of November and continuing right through to Thursday 28th of November, with showers becoming shorter and sharper and more sunny intervals breaking through too, with Wednesday looking as though it may actually give some of us some respite from the rain. Temperatures will still struggle at 7 degrees. So, even though there may be some moments of unbroken sunshine, it will still feel very, very cold at times. Well, there we have it, a bit like the selection boxes and tins of sweet treats we accustom to this time of year. It's a real mix of weather for the week ahead. Do take care, have a wonderful week, and enjoy the weather.
With temperatures already falling across the region, time now to hear from our gardening experts at MK Pulse magazine, with handy tips and advice on how to prepare and protect our garden plants from the harsher weather to come.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello, this is Jan with some seasonal tips and ideas from the gardening expert at the MK Pulse magazine. Plant tulips now for spring colour. You can pretend no more. Summer is but a fading memory. Right now, the nights are long and dark and the days can be just as grey and gloomy. Along with the clocks going back, the patio furniture gets put away and the falling leaves make for a stark and bleak picture. But gardeners know better than to turn their backs on their outdoor spaces. That's not a consideration, says Pulse's adopted allotment ace Jean Cocker. November is quite a busy month, with lots to get tidied and sorted. You might need to wrap up that little bit warmer while you're working outside, but there's nothing to really hinder your work. The last of the crops need to be cleared away, and those beds need to be made ready for spring. So I'll be doing lots of that in the coming weeks, she said. I'll also be prepping to make sure that when the new year does come, we have a gorgeous pop of colour in the flower beds. It's time to plant up the tulip bulbs. I love these perennials, and they deliver early in the year, which is a treat after the depressive winter. Tulip leaves are very hardy too, but it is worth thinking about your planting space. Battering winds can bring those flowers down before their time. Seed work, mentioned last month, continues too. If you gathered your seeds and dried them out, they will be ready for sorting and labelling now. It's a job that might seem a chore, but is really important. Organisation is key, so don't delay. Jean works a large plot and inevitably things will be damaged by weather, by wildlife, and just the simple wear and tear that occurs over time. Now that summer isn't in bloom, any outstanding jobs can be tackled in lieu of having to splash the cash on expensive replacements later on. And while we can't click the switch and turn on the central heating in our gardens, many of our plants and trees like to feel cosy too, and you can help them get hunkered down before the biting temperatures come in. Anything delicate needs to be covered with fleece to protect it over the winter. My lemon trees will certainly be getting that treatment to ensure they provide me with grapefruits next year. One job which is unavoidable is the continued collection of fallen leaves. It takes minimum effort, but ensures the garden stays tidy and the compost heap will benefit enormously from them, Jean said. If, like me, you have a pond, make sure that dead leaves aren't clogging the space, and also look to get rid of some of the plant growth if it has been extensive during the summer. Perhaps leave half the surface free from cover, but remember, it's a balancing act because the pond is also home to many creatures and they won't appreciate a rapid overhaul of their abode. So, how does your garden grow? Although the days are getting shorter, there's still plenty to do in the garden. Clear up the remaining fallen leaves and compost them either in a wire cage or in a black bag. Some people advise leaving those that have fallen on the soil of the border to be pulled down into the soil by worms and decompose, while others say it is better to clear them away as they provide cover for slugs and snails. Once borders have been tidied and weeded, fork over the compacted surface to improve aeration and drainage. I scatter a balanced fertiliser and then spread a mulch of spent compost over the surface for the worms to work in. The soil is possibly still warm enough for turf laying to repair a damaged area or create a new lawn. The pond will benefit from having pondweed and any overabundant water lily roots removed. The fountain pump should be removed and cleaned for the winter and any loose curb edging secured. The greenhouse should be cleaned inside and out. The roof glass may be cleaned with a pressure hose or a garden hose and a yard broom. Heaters should have a thermostat set at between 4 degrees centigrade and 7 degrees centigrade, depending on the situation and exposure of your greenhouse. Insulation of the greenhouse may be improved by lining the inside with sheets of bubble wrap, secured by drawing pins in a wooden greenhouse or special clips in an aluminium one. Pelargoniums and tender fuchsias should be brought in and kept in a light, frost-free area. If plain green shoots are seen on variegated shrubs, these should be pruned out to prevent them from becoming dominant, as these reverted shoots grow more strongly and outgrow the weaker variegated shoots. Trim long, thin shoots on bush and standard roses to reduce wind rock during winter storms, which may loosen the roots. Emptied plant pots will be accumulating and need stacking neatly for next year's use. Wash them in warm, soapy water to ensure pests and diseases are not passed on.
TNF Soundings.
Now, here come the quiz
answers,
and they're brought to us by Mina.
Hello, and here are your answers for this week's flashback quiz. Feeling confident? How will you score? Let's see. Question 1. In what year did Dudley Zoo open? And the answer? 1937. Question 2. What is on the menu for the animals in Dudley Zoo at Christmas? And the answer here is sprouts. Question 3. What was unique about Dudley Zoo's chairlift? And the answer, it was the first aerial ropeway chairlift in the country. Question 4. what was the castle addressed before 1926? And the answer is Sedgley. Question 5. Which side held the castle during the English Civil War? And the answer here is the Royalists. And finally, question 6. What is the name given to the castle famous ghost? And the answer, the Grey Lady. Did you get them all right? If not, not to worry, as I will be back next week to test you all once again. Bye for now.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who without their support would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!